Greetings and salutations. Welcome back to Colin's Last Stand Side Quest right here on YouTube. My name is Colin Moriarty. As always, I hope today's video finds you and yours very well. Today's episode of Side Quest is more like an experiment because I'm going to review a game for the very first time in Side Quest's history. I don't know if this is something I'm going to be doing often or if this is a one-off or just more sporadic. I need your feedback to figure that out. So again, consider this an experiment and let me know what you think. The game in question that I'm going to review is Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom, which by the time you're seeing this is out on PlayStation 4. And because I was such a huge advocate of and fan of the original Ni No Kuni back at IGN, I felt like this was an awesome game for me to kind of jump back into the critical sphere with. So this is kind of my take on Ni No Kuni 2 after about 35 hours with the game. I hope you enjoy it, and I will see you on the other side. Like many dedicated gamers, I've played a ton of games over the last three decades. And yet, there are times I reminisce over days past, tear through my game library, or look at old trophies on PSN, and think to myself, I don't remember one single iota of this game that I apparently spent 20 hours with and beat at some point. Only the special games truly stick around in one's mind as the years erode, and for me, the original Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch, launched exclusively on PS3 in early 2013, is one of those games. I reviewed it for IGN, so I got the game early in mid-December of 2012, and I obsessed over it during the holiday break. I fell in love with what developer Level 5 had done in synthesis with famous Japanese animation house Studio Ghibli. In other words, I remember that game. I remember playing it. I remember being in my recliner in my bedroom for dozens of hours absorbing it. I remember covering it, and I remember lots of awesome moments from it. When you play dozens of games a year, every year, that really means something. So needless to say, I've been amped up for Ni No Kuni's sequel since it was announced at PlayStation Experience in late 2015. Now that Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom has arrived, I'm pleased to report that, in some ways, the long wait between games and the additional wait during the sequel's delay was totally worth it. In other ways, though, Ni No Kuni 2 forgets, or just completely ignores, much of what made the original one of the great JRPGs ever. In fact, if you remove the facade and outward presentation of the games, you'll find little in common between the two. Wrath of the White Witch stood on three pillars that made it work: presentation, combat, and emotion. Its sequel dramatically alters the makeup of those pillars. So as a result, we have a great game in its own right, but one that shines for totally different reasons than what initially spawned it. For some of you, that's a huge positive. For others, that's going to be a disappointment. Ni No Kuni 2 primarily revolves around two characters, a boy mouse king named Evan, and an adult human male that somehow finds himself sucked into Evan's unusual world, a 20-something named Roland. In Evan's kingdom of Ding Dong Dell, a throwback to the original game, a coup d'etat violently removes him from the throne shortly after his father's death, and it's up to Evan and his friends to create a new kingdom while restoring peace and balance to their increasingly tumultuous world through a series of alliances that stress interdependence and friendship. While the Two Worlds mantra will be familiar to players of the original game, Ni No Kuni roughly translates to second world or second country, everything else will be somewhat unfamiliar, especially when it comes to emotional resonance, which Wrath of the White Witch so heavily relied upon. In fact, that's the utmost hallmark of the original game: loss, sadness, despair, and finding hope again. But Level 5 seemed largely uninterested in recapturing that, which is disappointing to me. I mean, Wrath of the White Witch was downright sad. That's really novel for this genre, and for games generally, and I wish the team endeavored to reach deep into players with a similar shock to the system. But they didn't. Part of the reason for a lack of emotion is that Evan and Roland, along with their various companions like a sky pirate and his young daughter, are barely voiced at all in the game. This isn't a problem in and of itself, but when compared and contrasted to why the original story worked so well, you'll find that this is probably the major reason why there's an emotional void, and the reason why, for me anyway, I didn't connect with the characters and plot nearly as much as I did in the first. It's shocking how few real cutscenes appear in this adventure, and how much reading I was doing during important moments that really could have used something extra in order to heighten my connection with the story. Unlike Wrath of the White Witch, Ni No Kuni 2's draw is in its systemic depth, and shockingly not in its story or characters. So the longer I played, the more I stopped truly caring about what was happening around me. There are some interesting characters, like the mysterious villain that looks a great deal like my dude Serpentor, and I loved some of the locales I visited too, like a city that bases its laws and customs on dice rolls, or an Atlantis-like kingdom that prohibits its citizens from falling in love. But all of that doesn't make up for the lack of a powerful protagonist, a plot worth getting invested in, or a stunning absence of, well, magic. Trust me, if you played the original, you will notice this. But for all that's disappointing, there are many spots where Ni No Kuni 2 really shines and really hits its stride. What the game does so well is that it gives the adventure scope, scale, and depth without going too far overboard. Indeed, Revenant Kingdom is a vast and ambitious game that straddles the line perfectly between giving you lots of content and giving you way too much content. In addition to the main story, there are tons of side quests to complete, a totally separate quest log called Errands, optional dungeons, an army on the field battle mode, and a kingdom building sim that could itself be its own smaller downloadable game on PSN. And within all of that is a whole different level of depth to explore, buttressed by an overworld that looks smaller than it is, packing a ton of dungeons and other locales that give the game geographic diversity. If you're looking for a game that's going to keep you occupied for a long time without requiring 100 hours of your life or more, you may have just found your match. I always felt like there was something to do, but I never felt overwhelmed by it all. Revenant Kingdom never feels mundane or drab from a things-to-do perspective, but it's not over-the-top Witcher 3 something to do in every square inch of the game either, which was a huge relief to me. Let's focus on the kingdom building aspect for a second, which in its own weird way is so reminiscent to me of ActRaiser, one of my favorite Super Nintendo games, a game that so strangely melded God Sim and side-scrolling action. It sounds absurd on paper, but ActRaiser was so amazing in execution, and there's a similar spirit with Revenant Kingdom in its seemingly incongruent parts that managed to add up perfectly. The basic gist is that, in addition to all of your JRPG trappings, many of them mentioned earlier, like side quests, you have territory that you can build upon, expand, populate, and garner benefits from, and doing so regularly enriches the rest of the experience. By spending capital, you can maximize your reach, build new structures, study new disciplines, and make yourself stronger in the real game. For instance, researching the creation of new armor with citizens that specialize in that craft can allow you to reinforce what you own or create things you cannot buy. This in turn contributes to your kingdom's prestige, which raises more money and therefore gives you more funds to reinvest. So maybe you'll grow your farms a bit this time around, so that they create more food that can then be used to cook. And once you cook a recipe, you may find its benefits useful in a battle that would otherwise be unwinnable at your current level, which fulfills a side quest, which then gives you another citizen who can be put to work. And so the cycle continues. There's an interesting wrinkle with the aforementioned battlefield system too, which puts you in charge of an army of different units that fight in a rudimentary, almost RTS-like mode. This mode has a totally different experience system, money that's locked into your kingdom but not into your personal purse, and plenty of perks that bleed into traditional in-game battles should you win. Like with its kingdom-building aspects, this battlefield mode feels and plays like something totally different, and I must admit that it's somewhat obtuse, even with experience. At first, I felt like yet another mode was a bit too much, but ultimately, I was incredibly satisfied with building my strength and prestige in a totally different way. Between taking to the battlefield, building my kingdom, and all of the trappings of the main campaign and its auxiliaries, nothing ever felt monotonous, because I was never doing the same activities for long. I could go check in on my kingdom for a few minutes, moving some people around, spending some cash on expansions, upgrades, and research, and crafting some new magic, items, and weaponry for the road ahead. Then I could go complete a few side quests to earn some money and experience, as well as recruit some new citizens for my kingdom. Once I'm done with that, I could take to the field of battle with my army, and bash some heads in before completing an optional dungeon, which has its own unique set of rules. Some of the loot I found all the while may be useful in an errand or two, which in turn unlocks more side quests. All of these systems interact with one another and heighten your involvement in the whole content ecosystem, instead of being drawn to only one or two aspects. It's pretty awesome, really, especially when you throw in a nice trophy list on top of it all. Of course, your more traditional JRPG combat fare is at the heart of Ni No Kuni 2, and here I wasn't as impressed, although I didn't find the combat bad by any stretch of the imagination. Just simplistic, and a far cry from another of those Wrath of the White Witch calling cards that made the original work so well in its own way. Gone is the combat I actually loved, the Pokemon-esque capture an enemy and use it in battle motif, and in its place is something I would characterize as an easier and more straightforward replica of what the Tales series does so well. Combat is action-oriented and without proxies, so there's a directness to it that's nice, but it's also button-mashy and largely unreliant on skill. I hate when a game could have combat depth and doesn't, but I actually hate even more when games have combat depth but give you no tangible reason to explore any of it. I basically just mashed square in every battle and survived easily, and I never once ran around an area just to level up. I was always able to beat the enemies I was supposed to be fighting at the time. There are special optional boss-like enemies throughout the world to fight that could give you a run for your money, but I would have liked a bit more challenge so that I had a reason to become even more invested. I think that sometimes simplicity is key because you can find real depth in simple mechanics. Ni No Kuni 2's fighting structure requires each character to have 3 weapons, to earn magic points by attacking enemies with certain weapons, and even has these little creatures that join you in battle that seem absolutely, positively superfluous and unnecessary. All of this is designed to make the game easier to grasp, which I respect, but I think it's all quite distracting, especially when coupled with a weird tablet-like object you receive that allows you to manipulate certain statistics, strengths, and weaknesses, which tip the scale towards the way too much end. See, the combat of the original is what helped make Ni No Kuni Ni No Kuni. I know some people didn't like it, but if you didn't, then you didn't like Ni No Kuni. I don't know why the sequel made this particular concession, because along with the stripping away of emotional resonance and impactful storytelling, there's little that tethers the two games together, other than the Studio Ghibli look. And since Studio Ghibli didn't actually work on Ni No Kuni 2, it's worth noting that perhaps that's the single reason why there's less presentational oomph here. Then again, Level 5 has made plenty of good and great games without their inclusion, so I don't want to harp on that. Ultimately, I liked playing Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom a great deal, even with its flaws and blemishes, and I recommend that PS4-owning JRPG fans go out and buy it, because I think you'll like it too. It's just that it wasn't released in a vacuum, all on its own. It was released in the shadow of the amazing first game, a game universally renowned for kicking players in the teeth with one of the saddest stories an RPG has ever told, and toting refined combat that provided its own depth. So naturally, the two will be compared, and Ni No Kuni 2 simply isn't as good as the first one. But with its own brand of depth, its own fun to be had, and its own interlocking systems that create a tantalizing gravity field that sucks you in, Ni No Kuni 2 is great, and if anything, it makes me hope that Level 5 gets another swing at the series, so that it can meld all that worked so right in the original with the depth of the sequel. Taking the best of Ni No Kuni and combining it with the best of Ni No Kuni 2 would be a true force in a JRPG genre weighed down by a lot of subpar and outright bad offerings. But that's a dream for another year. Well, that's it for this episode of Colin's Last Stand SideQuest. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, leave your comments below. I'll be reading them. Thumb up the video if you liked it. Thumb it down if you don't. And please share SideQuest and all things Colin's Last Stand, knockback, fireside chats, etc., with friends, family, your coworkers, your boss, the dude down the street, that guy you haven't talked to in 30 years, and of course, your grandmother. I will waste no more of your time, but I do appreciate the time you did give me this week. And I really do want to say thank you again from the very bottom of my heart, because CLS just turned one, if you didn't know. I'll see you next time for more SideQuest. Keep on gaming.